a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to another edition of Understanding the Law, this Tuesday, April the 4th.
We'll get your name fixed, too.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that.
So you're no longer Netherly?
No longer Netherly. They're fixing to change my name legally, I believe.
You didn't even have to go through probate court to get it done,
did you? I can do that. I can do that. So Melvin Hastings is in studio with us. He was out cruising on a ship last week, and we had Blake West in here talking about different things. And so welcome back. How was the how's the vacation?
It was fine. It was good. I love it. Just eat.
Eat.
That's what you do on cruise, just eat.
24/7, I bet.
24/7. They got food of all kinds and all everywhere. It's good. It's good food.
Man. People wait on you? Like you have people?
Oh, yes. They love it. Yeah. Yeah, they're good. They're fun, man. I've been on one before, but this one was real fun. They actually, and the dinners, after you had the dinners, they would start dancing. The whole dining room lit up with all kinds of cool lights and stuff. They started playing some kind of a crazy Macarena song. The guys, the waiters, and a lot of them were foreign. I mean, most of them were like from Indonesia and just different places like that, but they would put on wigs and put on crazy costumes and dance, and then everybody get up and dance. It was fun. Yeah, a dinner. Yeah, that was a dinner, so it was entertaining.
So did you do that fancy captain's dinner thing where you dress up?
Yeah, they have you have the casual dinners whenever like when you first board the ship, and then when you after the two stops, but then the fun days at sea, you do the elegant dinners. Yeah, okay. You dress up nice.
One of these days, I'll get Danielle to tricked into going with me or something.
Hey, it's pretty good.
But you know what? Personally, I want to go to the Virgin Islands. That's me. I want to go to St. Croix and check that out. Of course, I want to do Cozumel like everybody else does, but I think the Virgin Islands would be cool.
It'd be cool. It's cool. You get to see how people live, but actually, the beaches, I really expected more of the beaches to be like Gulf Shores and Panama City beaches. They're not.
They're not.
They got sand out there, and they're pretty, but they're real short, and then when you get out in the water, it's rocky.
Really?
Yeah, because you got to remember, a lot of these islands are volcanoes.
Right.
They're old volcanoes, so that's what you.
How about that?
That's what you got. You got volcano rock.
So was that water just crystal clear?
Oh, it is absolutely beautiful. The water is really, really clear. I don't know the snorkeling and stuff. I guess you really have to go out. It's probably better scuba diving, but everybody goes there for snorkeling. I don't know what you can see.
Huh.
Probably see goldfish and catfish. I don't know what all you see. A couple bass every once in a while. But it was nice. I mean, it is unbelievable. The difference in the water. And then here I am throwing a thing out there for Carnival. But that cruise out of Mobile, which is one we did, is nice because you're always in the Gulf of Mexico. So you can feel the ship move like forward.
Right.
But you don't, there ain't no side to side because you're in the calm water. Yeah. See, the other one I went out of was Orlando. So you're in the Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
So you rock a little bit. You rock until you get into some.
And I think it was just this last November that they actually started docking at a Mobile again.
Yeah. You know, they had that issue. Well, remember they had that issue with that boat? What happened to the cruise ship? Probably the one I saw. So then the engine catch fire or something. I think they were stuck out to sea for like 3 or 4 days.
Oh my goodness.
It was bad. Yeah. I'm glad it didn't happen to us.
You'll always see every now and then a cruise ship going bad.
Yeah, or last year or year before last, they had some people get sick, didn't they?
Yeah,
they got some kind of E. coli. Yeah, everybody got sick on it.
Yes, Hey, what about these guys that actually fall off the boat? I mean, really, what are you doing?
I don't know.
But we had two fall off the boat. We can't find them.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Well, that what was funny, they get you, when you first get on the ship, they have to have that, they call it a muster, don't they? Yeah. Well, where everybody come to, you have to go to a certain place if something happens. So wherever you're at on that ship, whatever deck you're on, you have an assigned place you have to go to if an emergency happens.
Okay.
If that ship starts sinking or if it gets a fire or whatever. So you go do that, and they go through all this safety stuff. And anyway, one thing they told us is that if somebody goes over, you know, falls off ship, you gotta start hollering, man overboard, man overboard.
Right.
Well, that's what my 8-year-old picked up on. So he was,
he's walking around.
Yeah, he was walking around ready to say man overboard. And he asked me, he said, Dad, so if somebody falls off, we gotta holler man overboard. I said, yes, sir, that's what we gotta do. Man overboard. You know, but I just thought, but he should have asked me, what if a woman falls over? Is it still man overboard? Or is it woman overboard now? But anyway, it was fun. It was great.
I'm glad you had a good time.
So, Blake, he enlightened you on
VA benefits.
VA benefits. I didn't know he knew stuff about that. That's good.
Well, he said he just went through some classes and became an accredited VA benefits administrator or something like that.
Well, good, because I don't have a lot, but I do have people come talk to me because they've been denied some VA benefits, and or some of it gets cut out, or maybe they have a problem with the getting things paid for. For instance, last year I had a guy come talk to me. I didn't even think about this, but he's from the Vietnam. So he fought in Vietnam, and he was one of the artillery guys with the big cannons. Mm. So, of course, he had hearing loss. I never just think about it. So here he is getting older, and he's wanting to get some new hearing aids put in, some new technology, and the VA denied it. So he was asking me questions, and I kind of pointed him some different ways, and I wrote him a letter and stuff. But I think they finally come in and fixed it. But I didn't think about it going all the way back for, you know, 40, 50 years.
And the thing that I didn't know that he explained is basically these VA benefits is really about money and them supplying money.
Yes.
Of course, based upon your current income and your expenditures, and then that kind of tells you what you're allowed if you're granted the benefits. But, and it just, I mean, I know it helps people.
Yes.
You know, people need it and have caregivers, and it's just unbelievable the amount of things that you're paying for. You know, and you're on a limited income.
Yes.
So he done a great job explaining everything about that. And
well, you'll have to have him back. He talked to you. He needs to talk to you about elder law too. He does a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, he told me that he does that, but we didn't actually speak on that.
Yeah, he needs to come back to a show now. He's probably one of the only ones around here that I know of that really does it. They used to there's people in Birmingham and Huntsville I know that specialize. That's all they did, setting up trust and helping you get things situated in that. And Blake kind of got involved in it and took off. I mean, I used to see Blake in the courthouse all the time, and I never see him in the courthouse now because he stays busy at his office. And that's where you make money at in your office. You don't make it in the courthouse. So.
Well, he is a very knowledgeable attorney, and Coleman is very... They are very privileged to have him here in this town.
He's not as funny as I am, though, is he?
Well, no, you know.
He's businessman. I like Blake, but he's businessman.
I love you, dude. I love you.
Yeah, he is a good guy. He doesn't cut up as much as I do. He's business.
But sometime at one time I said, hey, Blake, you're supposed to laugh. That was funny, dude. I think he grinned at me a little bit.
Yeah.
But we always talk about the downtown grill and things like that. So tonight we're going to talk about custody of children. And so if you want to call Melvin, you can, 256-737-9505, if you have a question, because we're going to talk about custody tonight. So Melvin, if you can, won't you just, let's start off by you explaining exactly what joint custody is.
Joint custody, you have two types of custody when you have these custody cases. There's a legal custody and then there's physical custody. So physical custody means, of course, where the children reside at. All right. And then you have legal custody, which means who makes decisions for the kids, who makes decisions about medical decisions, what doctor they go to, what procedures they have, who makes the education decisions about what schools they go to, who makes the religious decisions about what church or faith they go to and stuff like that. So that's the two different types of custody. Normally, when you have the words joint custody, what that means is the parents have joint legal custody, and then most of the time there's a parent that's designated as a primary physical custodian. So that is where the children primarily reside at. And that is different than what a lot of people think joint custody is. A lot of people think joint custody is what we call shared custody. That's where everything is 50-50.
Okay.
Time they spend with each parent's 50-50. The amount of say-so, 50-50. But like with the joint custody, legal custody, technically neither parent has more say-so than the other one as far as making decisions about the kids. But when you think about it, and it only makes sense, where the children live at primarily is going to be the parent that makes most of the decisions.
Right.
You know, and most divorces are like that now. Most custody cases have joint custody. I say it's rare. It doesn't happen very much where one parent has just pure sole custody and the other parent only has visitation rights. And even with that, so if you have a parent that has sole custody, then that parent has the child, and they make every decision about that child. The other parent has no decision-making authority over that child. They just have visitation rights. But even with that, if you have that situation, legislature has passed some statutes that gives that other parent or any parent access to children's education records, medical records, and stuff like that.
Because, you know, it seemed like, and maybe not, but it seemed like when I was growing up, it was that way.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
There was one parent, and usually it was the mother.
Yes.
That the children was with, and she had sole custody, and she made all the decisions.
Yes. Remember, they had the tender years doctrine, is what it used to be called, and they did away with that, which meant for a long time, I don't know how long it was, but the court system, legal system, believed that children in their tender years, in their younger years, their best interest was served being with their mother. Yes.
Right.
And they kind of did away with that at some point and decided, hey, it's not always as that should be like that. You know, you have to get, and it probably was a due process consideration, probably what it was. Somebody took it to the Supreme Court and said, hey, you know, I'm a father, and just because I'm a man and not a woman, they shouldn't have any better rights than I do, more rights than I do. So that's probably what changed it. And I was looking on something caught my interest the other day, and I was looking at some new laws that legislators looking at, and they do this every year, but they're looking at some serious changes now. I don't know if they're going to pass the Alabama legislature or not, but for instance, they're looking at some laws to say that it's always in the best interest of a children to have them, both parents have custody of the children, and then the court almost has to make a finding of fact of why one parent shouldn't have custody of the kids. Yeah, wow. So they're really doing that. And then they're also something about that it's always in the best interest for children to be in the custody of their parents, which I think is probably something with the, you know, DHR and termination parental rights and adoption stuff. So they're trying to make some strides in that. But, you know, if you go back to what we first talked about, this is equity court. And what that means is that even though there are laws and they're legal, there's some legal precedents about what judges got to follow, most of it's in their decision. It's to their discretion. If you do a case and you don't like the outcome and you file an appeal, one of the parts of appeal is you have to say, hey, what is the legal burden you have to meet? And it's known that judges have discretion, you know, and they don't get reversed unless they abuse that discretion, and it's hard to get them reversed on it.
So why don't we go into a scenario that mom has legal custody, and for some reason DHR is getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
So is DHR going to go directly to the father to say, hey, you need to get your kids before we put them in the system?
Yes. Normally what happens is if there's something that causes DHR to get called, and that could be anything. I mean, there are certain people, and we could spend a whole show on this, but there are certain people, teachers, daycare workers, medical personnel that are required by law, if they suspect abuse or neglect, that they have to report it. They are mandatory reporters.
Okay.
They have to do it. So sometimes situations happen. You know, it could be a child with bruises. It's just unexplained, and someone gets concerned about it, makes a phone call. Well, then DHR is going to investigate it. So they'll come to your house or wherever. Usually, what they do is go talk to the child find out what the story is. Then they get the parents involved. And if they go talk to, like in your situation, the mom, and they determine that, hey, maybe she's caused the abuse, or she's allowed the abuse to happen, or she's neglected the child in some certain situation, they have to contact the father. Yes, they'll try to figure out, you know, who the father is. If the parents are not married, then they'll try to figure out who the father is, and they have to contact him, let him know he has rights, and see what his situation is. You know, and then you go back to, hey, are these parents divorced? Is there already a court order out there about custody and things? And if there is, it, you know, it's a legal hurdle for them. They have to, it gets to be real technical. Because that, in a DHR case, that goes through district court. Like in Coleman County, that would be Judge Turner. And it goes through district court. And if it's a divorce case, then that goes through circuit court. And that's where Judge Nicholas handles them now. So if you got a situation where they're divorced, DHR will file a petition in Judge Turner's court. But then you also have to file something. Somebody's going to have to file something in Judge Nicholas's court, too, because he's already made a determination about custody in the divorce case, and now you got a new custody determination.
Yep. And so let me be fair. I said mom. I'll say dad also.
Dad or parent. or parent.
Yes. I want to make sure I'm fair on that.
But and everybody knows it. I don't know what the numbers are, but there's an overwhelming majority. Most of the time, the mom is the one that has the primary custody.
So, if you have seen any of these cases, and I don't know if you have, but if you have seen it to where DHR has been involved with a parent, something going wrong, does usually the other parent try to get sole custody of the child, or will the courts kind of lean toward that anyway?
I don't know if the court, I mean, the courts probably look at it, but yes, I'll just be honest, they take advantage of the situation, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the other parent, all of a sudden, they're getting called by DHR or something's happened with their child while in the other parent's care. The majority of them, overwhelming majority, is going to say, hey, here's my opportunity to get custody of the child. So they're going to go to court and file something in divorce court, say, judge, modify this, and they're going to file something down in the DHR court, the juvenile court. We call them dependency actions. So they'll file something in the dependency action saying, hey, give me my child. You know, they even though the other parent can't take care of them, I can give me my child. So.
And, you know, and we all hope that that doesn't never happen, but we know it does, and it happens
all
probably on a weekly basis, a daily basis. So let me tell you what really ticks me off is to see online, where there's, and, you know, a lot of times here in Coleman, to where the officers will go in, bust the family up, that, you know, their own meth, and these poor kids are in the presence.
Yes.
I mean, what kind of parent are you that you have a meth lab in your backyard, in your bathroom of your home, and you got children there? So, you know, you'll see where the DHR will come in and grab the kids real quick. Thank goodness that they do.
Yep.
But nothing ticks me off like when I read that. And that just, it irritates me so bad.
And that's exactly 100% what happens when a police officer does a search warrant, or for whatever reason he's at your house and there's drugs there. They will it may be because it's mandatory, but they always do. They'll always call the DHR worker on staff, and they'll come in. And typically, what they do in that situation is, if it's the mom and dad together, they'll be finding out from them who can this child go stay with.
Right.
And it, most time, you know, it's grandparents, but it may be an aunt or an uncle. I've even seen what's next door neighbors or friends or somebody like that, but they'll enter to what we call a safety plan. So the mom and dad will sign a piece of paper and say, with DHR, saying, look, I agree for my child to go stay with this person.
Okay.
And, you know, as long as you don't take them and put them into foster care.
Now, is this going to happen while they're about to get arrested? Or after
I mean, at the same time, it does, because I mean, when they do a search warrant, it's not, you know, they usually don't just go in and put handcuffs on everybody and put them in the police car and take them off. A search warrant executing, I bet it probably takes a couple, 3 hours. So while they're doing everything and they're talking to these people, and they got them, they do have them handcuffed when they're first in there, but these people are handcuffed, but DHR comes in, the worker on call goes in and they'll get stuff started and do it, yes. See, and it's not just that. Hey, it's domestic violence and everything else. You know that there's domestic violence cases all the time where there's families fighting and carrying on. So, there, you know, you get a call, cops go out there, and parents fighting, beating each other to death or whatever they're doing, and you know they'll be calling the HR worker too and get the kids. Yeah, man, it's disrupting. You know, you hope that wherever the children go are in that same vicinity, because let's say that you live in Vinemont, and then the grandparents' kids live in Cold Springs, you know, and these kids go to school, okay? And here you are at 10 o'clock at night taking kids out, taking them all out to Cold Springs to Grandma and Grandpa's house. Well, Grandma and Grandpa's got to get up early in the morning, get them back to school. Vinemont is such an inconvenience. There's a lot to it.
And I'll say it again. It's a good thing I'm not a cop.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I could deal with that. So listen to the Coleman County Sheriff's Department. If I ever apply for a job, don't hire me. Because they have more patience than I do, and I know that. God bless them men and women, is all I can say.
Yeah, and it's an issue. Nobody has answers for it. I don't know what the answers are, because you see the same people in the same situation.
I know.
They got issues. A lot of it's mental. I really do feel that a lot of it's mental issues. I think people, for instance, if you have ADHD or ADD or whatever, one of the medicines they give you is amphetamine. It's called Ritalin. It's listed as Ritalin, whatever else, but it's amphetamine. If you look, it says amphetamine salts. So that amphetamine helps you focus. Well, that's amphetamine, of course, is a major component of methamphetamine. So I think there's a lot of people out there that has problems with whatever hormone imbalance or mental ADHD or whatever else, and unfortunately the meth fixes them. I mean, it does, but it also kills you too. You know, people don't realize that.
You know, and I guess I've never been a drug user. I mean, I rarely have an adult beverage. You know, but and I never understand. You know, when people are addicted to this, of course, me being the sane man I am, I'm trying to think, man, you need to get some help. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to help yourself and you need to help your family. But yet, a lot of times, it's a repetitive thing, and they're back in the same situation the very next week.
It is no different than smoking, and it's no different than drinking. They're just like an alcoholic. They're just like someone that's stuck that's with smoking. You know, they can quit. They want to quit. They get out of that situation. But at some point, that temptation is just there, you know, and you go get that first drink, and then you're about alcoholic again. And that's exactly what they do. Because I've seen them cleaned up. I mean, they total different person, look good, carry themselves good. Everything's fine. And 3 or 4 years later, you see them in jail, see them somewhere, and you're like, oh, my gosh, there they are again. Mm-hmm. You know, and you talk to them, and they all say, man, I was doing good, and I just messed up. Hey, we have probation hearings every month, you know, violation of probation hearings every month. And every one of them. It's failed drug screens, get busted for drugs or whatever else. There's always something with it. Or even if they commit a theft or commit something else, the judge says, hey, what's your excuse for doing it? Why are you in this situation? Well, I just made a mistake, judge. I went and got around some bad people and started doing drugs, and then it's bad.
Yeah.
You just got to stay away from it. You can't take the chance and try. Listen, if I had a Bible, I'd put my hand on it. I have never tried methamphetamine, and I'm glad I've never
That's
tried
me.
It because people love it. There are people that loves it, and I think there really are people that I don't want to say they need it, but it helps them fix whatever problems, issues they have.
Right.
And, man, it's deadly. But, you know, heroin's the same way, and we don't see that much cocaine around here. There's still some. Cocaine's kind of... It's kind of went out. It's kind of out of style. It may be because it's pricey.
Yeah.
They used to say methamphetamine was a poor man's cocaine or something. I can't remember what it used to be, but because it probably is just too expensive or whatever else. And meth, man, you got to have the plant stuff to make it. Methamphetamine, man, you can go to Dollar General. You can go to service station and buy everything you need to fix it.
That's crazy. And you're putting pure poison in your blood system.
Yes.
That's awful.
And losing your teeth.
Yeah. Teeth. Got sores popping up all over you. You look like some crazy monster. Man. All right. The music is on. That means me and Melvin get to take a break for a minute. You're listening to Understanding the Law. If you want to give us a call, 737-9505. Melvin will be glad to answer any questions that you have. We'll be back in just a moment.
Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, is proud to present our first syndicated radio show. Hosted by our very own Coleman native, who is a member of the Coleman High School Class of 86, Paul Watley. Tune in on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. for British Music Rocks, a two-hour show featuring the best music from across the pond from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
This is Paul Watley, your host for British Music Rocks. Please join me each Sunday at 7 p.m. for British Music Rocks, where we will take an in-depth look at British rock from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
And stay tuned after British Music Rocks for our very own Sunday Night Live. All live cuts from 9 o'clock until midnight, right here on Live 95, the station all about Coleman. We're Coleman's Independent Radio.
If you're like me, your most favorite meal of the day is probably breakfast. And coming up on April the 8th, you have your chance for an all-you-can-eat breakfast and help out a great cause. The Coleman Kiwanis Pancake Day is coming up Saturday, April the 8th at the Coleman High School lunchroom. Get your tickets from any Coleman Kiwanian or at the door. They're only a $7 donation, and it's all-you-can-eat pancakes with all the trimmings. You remember coming to Pancake Day as a kid. So now, round up your kids and come to the Coleman High School lunchroom Saturday, April the 8th for the Coleman Kiwanis Club Pancake Day. For more information, visit the Coleman Kiwanis Club Facebook page. The Coleman Kiwanis Pancake Day, Saturday, April the 8th at the Coleman High School lunchroom. Coleman Kiwanis, helping the children of the world and Coleman County.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's Independent Radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
And Big D, Daryl Netherly. Back on the mic. Welcome back to Understanding the Law. We're actually, Melvin and I are talking about child custody, joint custody, and everything in between. So, and what we've been talking about just for the last few minutes is if the police get involved and DHR is called in and what all happens there. So, Melvin, and we've actually talked about how the children, we try to get them to stay with a neighbor, a parent, grandparent, cousin, aunt, whatever. But what happens when the children actually get in the system? And two-part question, how do they get out of the system?
Typically, if it's called an out-of-home safety plan. I'm not a 100% expert on this. I do a lot of it, but probably one of the DHR lawyers may know a little bit more about it. But something that's called an out-of-home safety plan, which I interpret as being that the children are not in the home. And I'll give you an example in a minute what an in-home safety plan would be. So if they're in an out-of-home safety plan, I believe that there's something about 90 days, and it may be that if they're in an out-of-home safety plan for 90 days or more, then they have to get it court-approved. So what happened is they'll file a petition in Judge Turner's court here in Coleman, and then he'll set a court date and do stuff. He'll appoint a guardian ad litem for the children, which is a lawyer for the children or child, and then you'll have a court date, and then he either approves it, says yes, this is fine, and it kind of becomes an order, or he'll dismiss it. So, you know, a safety plan is just a contract with DHR. It's just like any other contract; you can break it. You know, and so once you, that's why they like getting them in front of the judge and getting a court order, and it kind of gives them a little bit more beef. So if someone decides to run or not follow it or whatever else, then they've already got a case in front of the judge. They can get some pickup order, so they can go pick the child up and do whatever else they need to.
But when they're going into the system, are they carried usually to a foster parents or something?
They don't have to be. That's the whole purpose of a safety plan, is so they do not have to go to a foster parent. So what you're doing in a safety plan is a parent is saying, all right, DHR, I'm going to have this agreement with you. I'm going to delegate my parental authority to these people, these grandparents. We'll let the children stay with the grandparents, and I'll agree they can stay there. In return, you're not going to take my children and put them in foster care.
Okay.
That's the idea. That's the idea behind doing a safety plan. And most of the time that works. You know what I'm saying? People, that's the last thing they want, they go into foster care. But even if there's a situation where they take some children, you know, let's pretend, let's assume that they get called on a medical call. One of the parents has got the children and they're passed out on drugs. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just assume they're passed out on drugs, just in a coma. And they can't get information about the children. So sometimes then they'll have to put them into foster care. You know, but if they take children, if the DHR, because they're a state agency, if they take children, within 72 hours, they got to have that child, or they have the case in front of the judge. And then it's called a shelter care hearing, but the judge determines, yeah, DHR, I'm going to give you custody. You can continue to have custody. And sometimes, and I've had them, sometimes we've had these hearings in justice, there's just not enough there for me to take custody from these parents and or the children back to the parents.
All right, so another question. Let's say that the children do go into the system. They're placed with foster parents. Now, is DHR going to contact a local school to let the school know that they are in under DHR, just in case the parents maybe try to come get the kids out of school?
Yeah,
or something?
Yeah, they'll contact them. And like I said, if the children are taken, then within 72 hours, and it includes weekends too. So you know, if let's say on a Thursday, DHR becomes involved and they take your children, well, then the 72 hours would be Sunday. Well, okay. Guess what? Sunday's included in that situation, too. Okay. So they know to get that case in front of the judge Friday if they can. But they'll be taken in foster care. There'll be orders entered by the court. It's called a shelter care order, and they will give DHR custody. Mm-hmm. And then they'll supply those papers to the school. And then they know, yes, the school knows that parents are not able to come get them, pick
all right,
them up.
So here, another question. Maybe it's a little off to the left, but that's okay. Foster parents in Coleman. Is there foster parents in Coleman that's just doing this, bringing in these children that's going to be put in the system?
I don't know that there's some that are just like emergency. They probably do. There's probably a group of foster parents that DHR works with, that they trust and they know that they can do, that they can call them in the middle of the night and these people will take them in.
Okay.
You know, and then there's foster parents. There's actually foster homes. There's people that maybe they've been approved to have five children in their home, you know, and that, you know, and if they got five children, that gets to be an issue, you know. But in an emergency situation, I guess they'll have, if you haven't, you know, they'll add one or two more.
Right.
And sometimes, actually, DHR, in their rules, they have a way to make provisional foster parents. So what they can do in an emergency situation is, and this does happen. You wouldn't think it does, but it does happen. You have a parent here that has children here, but there's absolutely no relatives. No relatives. They're in New Mexico or Arizona. I say that because I know this situation. It's Arizona, wherever. So there's no relatives to place these kids. So maybe there's a next-door neighbor, a friend, or whatever else, and they've taken this, the state's taken this child, so there's no safety plan. So they can do a quick background check. They have some things they can do real fast and kind of speed up the process, and if them people pass it, then they can make them provisional foster parents, because to be a foster parent, it's a program you got to go through, what, 6 weeks, 6 months?
Oh, yeah.
I can't
I'm
remember.
Sure. I'm sure.
It's a big deal. You got to go through a lot of background checks. They do all kinds of stuff on you. You have to go to classes. There's a lot of stuff. They have to prove you home. There's a bunch of stuff you have to be a foster parent. So they have a process where they can make you a provisional foster parent, you know, and they can place some kids with a neighbor or with someone.
And how long can they be that provisional parent? 3 months? 2 months?
Yeah, I don't know. They have their rules, but there is a rule on it. I can't remember what it is. But they do have a rule. They got to do it so much, and then what happens is if you can't be a provisional foster parent forever.
Okay.
Provisional foster parent, say an emergency foster parent, and if you're going to continue to be a foster parent, at some point you got to go through the loops to do everything else.
So why don't we go back to the joint custody, which is basically what we're talking about tonight, and tell me, when parents have joint custody, why do some pay child support and some don't? Explain that to me.
All right, so
let's be a little more particular and say let's say it's shared custody.
Okay.
Because that's the thing. People come in and say, hey, we have joint custody, and now they want me to pay child support. Well, I'm going to have to pay child support. We got joint custody. And I say, well, are you saying it's joint or is it really shared? And they say, well, I got them 1 week and she's got them 1 week. So what happens is, the whole idea behind child support, I think we've talked about this before, is that the children shouldn't be affected by the parent separation. So they'll take the mom's income, they'll take the dad's income, even though they may not be together, and it's just their income. It's not their spouse's income. So it's not dad's wife's income. Okay. It's not the whole household income. It's dad's income only and mom's income only. And there's a formula you go through and you determine the child support amount. So if, let's just say we got dad. Dad's making $70,000 a year. Mom's making $20,000 a year. He says, well, I got them half the time. I take care of them when I do. She got half the time when she takes care of them when she does. Well, you see, there's a big $50,000 right. disparity in them. So in that situation, sometimes parents agree not to get child support anyway. But if the judge heard it, he'd have to order child support. And most of the time, you end up paying it. So the formula is, we say, all right, what's the child support amount that the dad would owe the mama? What's the child support amount that the mom would owe the dad? And you subtract the difference.
Okay.
So if the numbers come up to be that one owes one $500, the other one owes one $300, then the one that's the parent that would owe the $500 would only pay $200. You're still paying child support,
right.
But see, if you're equal, I owe you $300, you owe me $300, there's no reason to change money.
Exactly.
So that's why there's no child support order. But if I owe you $500 and you owe me $300, then
right.
then you got to divvy up the difference, which is $200. So okay. So if you follow the rules, you have to pay. You have to take that consideration and pay it. And if the judge hears the case, he has to order it. Now, he can deviate from the child support guidelines, but he has to state a reason why he's deviating.
So paying child support now, is it still like it was years ago? Can you still pay through the courthouse? Is that how it goes?
No, it
now,
used to be. It all goes through the centralized disbursement system, I think is what it's called.
Out of Montgomery?
Yes, out of Montgomery. So everything goes to Montgomery and it's paid back. But now, in 2000, and I started this in 2002, and probably for at least 10 years of, well, maybe not 10 years, 6 or 8 years of, probably about in 2010 or before, they stopped taking the child support at the courthouse because they used to be able to go in and pay it at the courthouse
right.
and they'd send checks out. But I don't know if that's too much for the clerks. Probably was because at some point, you got to remember, the states started having problems with money and then it was hard to get. They had to cut back on the clerks' offices. I mean, they had to lay off some of their employees and then they wouldn't replace some of their employees, so it got to be too much of a bind to try to pay out the money. So now it all goes to the one place in Montgomery.
So now basically we're saying that if dad's paying the child support, it's coming out of his payroll check at work.
Yes, yeah, and that's kind of way everyone's going. There's still some people says that they want it paid and, pay it between themselves, but most everybody just does income withholding, because I think most employers really – it used to be that the parent was afraid that he's going to lose his job. Because
right.
here he goes to his employer and he's going to have to start taking money out of his check. And his employer says, I'm not going to spend the extra money to take us out of your check. I'll just go get somebody that doesn't have to pay child support.
Right.
But I think generally now most employers realize that that's just something that's common now.
Right.
And they do it. So now it's due to income withholding order. It's called an income withholding order. In the beginning, when I first did my law practice, I remember a lot of times the provision about child support would say that the one parent would pay it to the other, and it says that there would be an income withholding order entered and kept in court file, but it wouldn't be served unless that parent became delinquent. So,
okay.
so you could pay the child support by checks from cash to the other parent. Always pay by checks, never cash, by the way. So you can back it up.
Exactly.
But anyway. And then if they got behind, the other parent would go file something and say, look, he hadn't paid me in 30 days. It's been 45 days. I still haven't got paid. And then what would you say? He still works at this place or whatever else. And the judge would just enter that income withholding order that was on hold gets entered then, and then it's taken out. And that's important for the employers. if you got an order to take it out and you don't do it, you can be held liable for it.
Okay. So why don't we jump forward now that the children are getting older? Child support stops at the age of 19 now, is that correct?
Yep, age of 19. I think at one point it probably used to be 18, and there's some states, and I hope you don't ask me this question because I'm going to get caught. There's some states it's 18. So the question is, hey, if you got divorced in another state and you come over here, do you still go by the 18 or 19?
And hey, that's true.
I've had to deal with that issue, and I can't remember how we dealt with it. I would assume that if both parents are here, that you're probably going to be stuck with the to the 19. But now, as the other part of me says, hey, you know what? There's a court order somewhere else. And Alabama can't, you know, there's a process that you got to go through to take that court order from Michigan and make it an Alabama court order. So if you're still going under the Michigan court order, then it stops at 18. You know, they'd have to go through the process. And actually, that's another issue. That's another thing with DHR. That's another service that they do. It's called the Interstate Family Support Act or whatever. It's between the states, Family Support Act. They're able to take this, Michigan order. So DHR in Michigan and DHR in Alabama will work together to get the support and stuff.
Okay.
Yep.
I think, if I remember correctly, it was several years ago, 5-6 years ago, there was actually a lady that was taking her husband back to court because of she wanted child support, I believe, and while the child was actually in college, wanted dad to continue to pay child support. There was a judge, I believe, in Athens, Alabama, that actually said yes. And so that went into effect, and I believe it may have been a year or two later or something, another judge actually overruled him.
Yeah, he got reversed because this is the issue. And now it is a new deal too. Once a child turns 19, then that parent's obligation to pay support stops. There is an exception to it. That's if that child is a dependent. What I mean is he's got a disability. So this child's got Down syndrome or something. You know, he's got some disability. Well, he's going to be a dependent. He's never going to be a person to be able to take care of himself. Then I think the law states if you got to file it before the age of 19, but you can another parent can still have to pay to support that child. But otherwise, it always stops at 19. So what the law used to be, and it got changed, was that you was asking for post-minority support, which means help with paying for college. And the courts could order that up until, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, and Supreme Court of Alabama said it was a due process, equal protection type claim, and I've always thought that was what was going to happen at some point. You can't sit there and say it's not fair to classify people saying, all right, if you're divorced, then you have to pay for your child's college. You know, court can make you pay for college. But if you're not divorced, they can't do it.
Right.
So somebody finally made that argument to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court says, you know what, you're right. So, you know, the state of Alabama, the judges can't sit there and order just because you're getting divorced from somebody, you're going to have to pay college expenses.
Right.
So they've overruled that. Now, parties can still agree to it. And if you've got it in your old divorce, you need to file and get it modified, get it changed, because you still have an old court order that orders it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you can file something to get that modified and get that taken out because of that case from the Supreme Court.
And of course, you know, like me or any other father, you know, that's responsible. We're going to help our kids,
yes,
you know, in college. But don't sit there and tell me that I have to do it.
That you have to do it.
Because my child is now a legal adult.
Yes.
So, you know, that's just kind of crazy.
And I feel foolish because I should know the name of the case, but I can't remember the case that did the post-minority support. But when you go back and read that case, when they first come back, we go back to custody and divorce cases. Remember, the judge has discretion. So what happened in that case, and it'll come to me in a minute, but what happened in that case was the judge heard this case, the mom saying, look, he should have to pay support. And the judge says, yeah, you're right. He should. So the dad didn't like it. It was the father. He didn't like the decision, so he took it to the Supreme Court of Alabama. The Supreme Court says, no, judge has discretion in this situation, you should have to do it, and you're going to do it. What people don't realize is that case that they went crazy with, everybody just went crazy with this post-honor support, the dad was like a radiologist or something like it. He was making $600,000-$800,000 a year. Yeah. Okay, mom's making $20,000 a year. So the court in that situation says, hey, you're making $500,000 a year. Right. You can afford to send your pay $20,000 a year to send your kid to school.
Right.
Okay. So that's what got the case started. And then everybody just kind of went with it. And then, you know, they're asking for it no matter what. You know, you got some guy working at Walmart making $9 an hour. And
right.
They're saying, you're going to have to pay for college, you know. Yeah. But eventually the courts kind of got a little bit of control on it and said, well, you can only order it. You know, people can agree to what they want to, but you can only order it if the child, they have to be in a state school. You can't, you know, it ain't that they get to go to Harvard or whatever else. Right. They got to be in a state school in Alabama. They got to maintain at least a C average. They got to be a full-time student. They got, you know, they set some limits and guidelines on it. And that helped out a lot. And then, like I said, eventually, and I was afraid, well, I was always afraid when people come in, they want to put that provision in. I really didn't like it. People wanted it, and I'd put it in if they wanted it. But I'd say this. I said, look, I'm afraid that at some point in the future, even though a divorce between a mom and a dad, and that's the plaintiff and the defendant, this child is like a third party beneficiary in this divorce case. What if that kid? What if mom and dad don't want to pay for college, but all of a sudden this kid comes in, goes to a lawyer and says, hey, mom and dad agreed to pay for my school and that divorce 10 years ago. Now they're saying they're not going to pay for it. What if that kid went and filed a lawsuit against his parents and won, and the court says, y'all are going to pay it.
Right.
So most time when I put it that way to the parents, they'd be like, well, maybe we don't want it now. Because I said, look, I said, you can always pay it. You know what I'm saying? But do you want to have an order that says you have to pay it? I said, right. What if you're in a situation where you can't pay it? I said, then you're going to go back to court. I said, so I always advise, I don't like it. You know, and I get divorce agreements from other attorneys that would have them in there, and that'd be the first thing. I said, no, we need to strike this off. You don't. You know, they said, well, I'm going to pay for my kid's college. I said, well, that's fine. You can do that.
Right.
This ain't that you, just because it's not on here doesn't mean that you can't do it. Let's just don't make it that you have to do it.
Right.
So like I said, you can agree to it. People, I mean, they still do it. I had one 2-3 weeks ago that wanted, and I was like, man, I just wouldn't do it. It's not enforceable. The judge can't order it. Why do you agree to something that the judge can't order? Mm. No, so.
I just can't imagine my own kids suing me.
Oh yeah, hey Dad.
Hey Dad, yeah, you're gonna pay it.
You're gonna pay that to pay for my college.
I'm taking your car away.
Yes,
we're fixing to go to break, and we'll be back in just a moment. If you want to have a question, 737-9505. You're listening to Understanding the Law with Melvin Hastings. We'll be back in just a moment.
Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio, is proud to present our first syndicated radio show. Hosted by our very own Coleman native, who is a member of the Coleman High School Class of 86, Paul Whatley. Tune in on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. for British Music Rocks, a two-hour show featuring the best music from across the pond from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
This is Paul Whatley, your host for British Music Rocks. Please join me each Sunday at 7 p.m. for British Music Rocks, where we will take an in-depth look at British rock from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
And stay tuned after British Music Rocks for our very own Sunday Night Live. All live cuts from 9 o'clock until midnight, right here on Live 95, the station all about Coleman. We're Coleman's Independent Radio.
If you're like me, Your most favorite meal of the day is probably breakfast. And coming up on April the 8th, you have your chance for an all-you-can-eat breakfast and help out a great cause. The Coleman Kiwanis Pancake Day is coming up Saturday, April the 8th at the Coleman High School lunchroom. Get your tickets from any Coleman Kiwanian or at the door. They're only a $7 donation, and it's all-you-can-eat pancakes with all the trimmings. You remember coming to Pancake Day as a kid. So now, round up your kids and come to the Coleman High School lunchroom Saturday, April the 8th for the Coleman Kiwanis Club Pancake Day. For more information, visit the Coleman Kiwanis Club Facebook page. The Coleman Kiwanis Pancake Day, Saturday, April the 8th at the Coleman High School lunchroom. Coleman Kiwanis, helping the children of the world and Coleman County.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
So, Melvin, if we actually had people that just filled these phone lines up and didn't call your law office, you'd probably have a long lunch, wouldn't you?
I would, because I'm going to tell you, I don't know. I really do attribute it. I don't know how many people listens to our show, but I know over the last, and Danielle can confirm this, over the last month or so, I can't get no work done in my office. None whatsoever. I have to go up there, and I did it Sunday night. I actually went up there in my office like at 10 o'clock Sunday night, and I stayed there until 5:30 Monday morning. I went home, took a shower.
Don't want to call the show so you can feel better.
Yeah,
please.
So I worked until then just to get stuff done, because I always have people coming in and they got cases and pay money. You know, that's good. But we talk and I stay real busy. So and then that's just the people coming in. It ain't all the phone calls and trying to return the phone calls. It's a law office gets real busy.
So now do you have a single phone line, or do you have one of them big boards where you can take 20 calls?
Yeah, I need one. No, I'd be nuts. No, I have I have two lines, and it's just a rollover line. So I have my one office phone number that I normally use, and then it has a rollover line on it too. So and it just stays busy.
I mean, I can just imagine.
It's tough.
I bet when they hang up, it rings again, don't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, me. So before we get back to the law, just one quick plug for the radio station. April 29th and 30th, we're going to have the Battle of the Bands live 95.5 at Coleman County Fairgrounds. We're going to have about 12 bands lined up. They're actually lining up right now. We're going to bring you more information here very quickly within the next week on ticket sales. We're going to have food vendors, a place for the kids. We're going to have a car show. It's just going to be 2 days of great entertainment, Coleman County Fairgrounds. And so make sure that you keep an eye on our page for vendor applications on live95coleman.com. We have those that you can fill out and submit. You know, we really got some cheap prices as far as I see it for vendor booths and things like that. So bring your family, your kids. It's just going to be 2 days of great fun, April 29th and 30th at the Coleman County Fairgrounds. It's the third annual Live 95.5 Battle of the Bands. All right, so Melvin.
So is KISS really going to be headliners?
Look, man, that was a secret, and I just told everybody. What's up with that?
I just blew it. We can dress up. Hey, listen, Daryl, listen. We can dress up. But now I got to be honest. I think you'd make a good Peter Criss.
I'm good with that.
But the only problem with that is the only Peter Criss outfits I have is for my wife. You'd have to wear a skirt.
I can have little boobies.
Yeah, you'd have to wear a skirt and some high heel, what do you call them, exotic dancer shoes.
Yes, stripper shoes. Stripper boots or something. Not that I've ever been to one of those places.
We could put on a show for them.
Pull up in a limousine at the Coleman County Fairgrounds, yes. And we all four get out. Man, yes. People would just be freaking out.
They'd die. Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, maybe we can get Ace Frehley to come down here and play for us.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't remember it anyway. He's drugged up all the time, 7 days a week. So have you ever seen him on any kind of interview?
Yes.
Holy smoke.
Yeah.
Like, he's out there.
Yeah,
he is. I mean, really, he's out there.
He was, too. But when you go back to the 70s and the 80s, he was funny. But he was out there then. But he was funny. He was real funny on his interview.
So I guess at one point in time, when they actually came back, and I don't know what year it was, but they all came back at one time. And Gene Simmons says, I was so afraid that he would not hit a lick at a Kiss song. And said, as soon as we started with the first song, it's like he never left the band.
Yes.
He was right on it.
Yep.
So, even with that fried brain of his, the man is so talented, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, and the best thing I like about Ace Frehley, you know, when I seen him in 2000, you know, he still had the whatever, the fireworks coming out of the end of the guitar.
Yeah.
Like, how cool is that?
Have his little pickup on there, start smoking and stuff when he plays. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then he shoots don't he have the grenade launcher? Yeah, he has a little grenade launcher thing on there that shoots out the end. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-mm.
And what they still do, the Tommy Thayer is the guy. It's kind of interesting. Here we are talking about Kiss on a legal show. But anyway, Tommy Thayer used to be the backup guy. He was the guitar technician while Ace was there, and there's been times when Ace wouldn't show up, so they had to dress up Tommy, go out there and play. Yes.
So whenever
they decided to part ways with Ace Frehley, then Tommy Thayer took over, and he's the one that's doing it now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how can Gene Simmons hold that much fake blood in his mouth at one time?
I don't know.
Man, it's like he's got a gallon of it.
Yeah.
And he'll just let it drip out of his mouth, and it's kind of thick, and it's kind of gross.
It is kind of gross.
It is gross,
but that's part of his show.
You know,
and then the part where he's on the stage, and all of a sudden he's up on top of the tower.
Blew me away. Because the lights only went off in the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center for a split second.
Yeah.
And we're like, where's Gene Simmons at? And he was like 40 foot in the air.
Yes.
So, I mean, they had a zip line on his back that yanked him up.
Yes,
so, I mean, he probably got about 3 G's going up there.
Oh, he went. He goes, man.
Oh, memories. All right. So, earlier, Danielle was given some of her legal knowledge. And basically what we're talking about is if the cops, police officers are called in, really, what's the difference between a personal warrant and a property warrant?
All right. So, if a person commits a crime, then the officers, you know, they either arrest them on the spot, then they go get a warrant for them, or sometimes they go get a warrant for a person and then go arrest them. For instance, let's say I seen Big D out there stealing something out of my shed yesterday. So I contact the sheriff's department today and talk to him about it, and maybe I got him on camera. What they would most of the time do is, if they're going to go arrest you at that point, they'll go to the magistrate, say, look, I have probable cause to believe that Big D was in Melvin's shop last night. I want a warrant for him for burglary third. They'll go get a warrant, and that's a personal warrant. That they say, go arrest that person. So then they have a warrant. Now, does that mean that they'll go arrest you tomorrow? Most of the time, they're going to go arrest you when they got it. But now, sometimes, and here's a trick, they might get mad at me telling this trick. Sometimes they may say, you know what, we've heard that Big D is breaking in a lot of stuff, and he's doing a lot of stuff with drugs and stuff like that. We're going to hold this warrant, but we've heard it, but we don't have corroborating knowledge. We don't have somebody that has seen him do it.
Right.
So we're going to hold this warrant for about a week or two or a month or so when he's not expecting it. We'll go to his house, and we have a warrant on his person.
Right.
So we can serve it on him. Well, we'll knock at his door, see if he comes to the door, or if someone's there. And if they say, yeah, he's back in the back bedroom, well, we got a warrant. We can enter his house and go arrest him. All right? Well, what do you think they're doing when they enter in your house?
They're looking
for everything, because if an officer sees – an object in plain view, then that is probable cause to arrest you for a new offense.
How about that?
So that's what it is. Whereas a property warrant is like search a property. That's like doing a search warrant, go see if you find something.
That's smart on their part.
Yeah, smart on their part. They're real smart. They get pretty savvy with what they do.
Well, that hour was quick, Melvin. Jeez. Yes. Maybe we need to do a 4-hour show one of these days.
Whew, that'd be fine.
Hey. Danielle would have all kind of stuff written down on his notepad then. You're listening to Understanding the Law, and we will catch you next Tuesday. And Melvin may try to bring another guest or two in and explain some of the things to us. We will catch you next Tuesday. God bless you, and God bless America. We'll catch you next time.